Howdy.
And welcome to, there we go, another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And my name is Bill Cundiff.
Who's our sponsor this hour, Bill?
Well, you know, our sponsor this hour is Pape Machinery.
That's good, because they're a good company. Yeah, they're good.
Yeah, they're a good company. They're good. They're a very strong, big, large, local John Deere dealer.
Nice.
And, yeah, anything John Deere, go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard. They've got tractors. They've got implements. They've got backhoes. You name it. Go up and see them. They also carry the Honda product line and the Steel product line. So if you're looking for yard maintenance stuff like weed eaters, chainsaws, trimmers, they've got it all in stock. And also a pretty good selection of Honda generators. So go up and see them. Or give them a call. Their phone number is 226-9226, or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Well, that is very snazzy.
Yeah, it is.
And as if I didn't have enough going on over here, I'm trying to get my other computer to... No, leave that alone. That's okay. The coffee. We want that within reach. Coffee must be within reach at all times. Today, as a matter of fact. Okay, so today, we're going to go back to the topic of... marijuana, one of our tried and true topics. We do have a tab at the top of the webpage. If you go to wethepeopleradio.us, you will find a pot tab. It was nice, short. Everybody knows what it means, so that's what it says. And I will add today's show to that. I haven't done that yet. I just ran out of time. Today's February 21st, 2021, just for reference in case we replay this at a later date, because I'm just guessing this information will be current for a little while, unfortunately. We're speaking with a group of Siskiyou County citizens. So these folks live in Northern California, not Monterey, Northern California, but the real Northern California, just shy of the Oregon border. And I do hope you go to the page for today, because the most important part, besides the audio that we're going to get, are the pictures. You know, you can easily dismiss what people say and, oh, they're just mad because their area is changing, or, you know, whatever kind of nonsense. But you go look at the pictures, and they really speak for themselves. Here you have this beautiful, beautiful area. I've got a slideshow for you. I've got a little snippet that one of the ladies did on a map, give you some just to give you some context. But it's right near Mount Shasta. I mean, right in the shadow of Mount Shasta, and you would think, well, gosh, what a great place to live. Hardly anybody out there, and, you know, this would be terrific. And then you start looking at what's going on there, and this has been going on for a while. They're going to give you some context on that and how this affects people on the ground. So when we talk about in different states, you know, you talk about legalizing marijuana, and, oh, it's all for people who are sick, and it's medicine, and blah, blah, blah. That's great, but what it does is it creates a rural crime wave. Because you can grow it cheaper if you grow it illegally. They used to always do this on the public lands. That's where my experience typically was when I lived over on the coast in the Emerald Triangle. They grew on public land. And so you had tons of federal resources that could fall on them. You had the camp helicopters every year that swooped in and did these big raids and stuff. The problem with this is they're buying property, cheap property out in a rural area, and then I don't know, subdividing amongst themselves. I think we'll get some information on that. But this requires lots of complicated law enforcement. And bottom line is the only real headway they've made thus far is with money laundering and that sort of thing. But when you look at the on-the-ground degradation, it's mind-blowing. And you hear, you know, what's going on in people's lives who've lived there in some cases for a very long time. Just having their world turned upside down, and they can't really do anything about it other than flee their homes, which these folks have decided not to do, and God bless them. So we're not using their real names today because it's not a smart idea when you're up against cartels to be running around telling them that you're opposing them. I think the fact that they're staying sort of shows they're opposing, but we'd like to not put people in any kind of jeopardy. So I'm not on the Zoom call, ladies. I'm sorry. I'm working on that, but I failed on my multitasking, and I'll do that while you talk. I think we're going to talk about the history of the area first, if everything stayed the way it was about 40 minutes ago. So fire away on where you guys would like to start with this story.
Okay, hi. I'm Miss Day. I'll just start in by talking about the history of the area. When this all started, I we're coming into our sixth year of illegal grows here, and in the very beginning, people were just encroaching and just kind of squatting on properties out here that are. A lot of people own property out here that don't live here. Maybe it was gifted to them, or they inherited it, but or maybe they just bought something thinking, oh, maybe I'll retire there someday. So people started growing gardens, marijuana gardens, and leaving a lot of trash behind. And people were complaining. Residents, people that live out here, were complaining about the trash and a lot of stuff that was getting left behind from these grows. And, you know, you didn't really think a whole lot of it. You know, we live here. A lot of us have lived here 10, 20, 50 years. Some people have grown up here. Don't really think a whole lot about, you know, well, no big deal. Just some people, you know, growing weed. You don't think about it. But then in a couple years later, you start seeing just this huge influx of, like, Asian people. And they're at Walmart. They're all over, like, and you just start seeing more and more people just, like, moving in. It's like, whoa, what the heck is going on? Where are all these people coming from? And then they start buying up really cheap property. There's a subdivision in our area that has really cheap property. The reason why it's cheap is because there's really just not very much water in there. And so they just start buying it up, and they just start growing. Like, it just becomes like this explosion of, like, giant marijuana grows. And
this goes on for miles. I mean, we're not just talking somebody's got something smelly in their backyard over the fence.
Yeah, no, this is not like that. And then you know, a lot of the Caucasian residents still living, or people that have been living back in the subdivision, start complaining about the smell, and they start complaining about the trash and the noise and the pollution, and just like there's just a whole bunch of like this stuff that's cacophony that's going on, and then they just slowly start moving out. They start moving out of the subdivision. They start getting bought out, you know, because if you're not a very rich family, maybe kind of a poor family living in this subdivision, if somebody offers you $100,000-$200,000 for your 5 acres, you're like, wow, I'm taking that. I'm out of here. And so basically this entire subdivision by now has been completely taken over.
And how many,
like a third world country.
I don't mean to interrupt, but how many people are we talking about? You say you're starting to see a lot more people in town. What kind of numbers are we talking about?
So you start going into Walmart and you just start seeing like Asian people everywhere, like hundreds of them. And it's just like, what in the world is going on here? We're talking hundreds. And right now, I think as of last summer, I had heard that there were like 4,000 people living in this subdivision, which is greater than the population of Wairika.
Whoa.
And this is just in one single subdivision.
See, that's the thing. You have 27,000 voters in your county. And this county is massive. I should pull up some stats. I didn't do
that. It's totally massive. Like, how many people have, like, moved into that subdivision alone? It's not a huge subdivision, but it's big enough to have that many people, and I have a feeling that more people are going to end up there this summer. I wouldn't be surprised if 4,000 went to 6,000.
Oh, sure.
So
you're looking at
more and more people.
You're looking at 44,000 people in 2019, based on the census estimate, and you're Your Asian population at that time was 1.6. Not that we care what nationality people are, but it is kind of a tell when suddenly you have a giant influx of the first folks that came were all Hmong, Laotian, and they mostly came from like Minnesota and whatnot. All of a sudden, you have all these Minnesota license plates in this rural community in far northern California. Kind of a red flag.
Yeah, they're from Minnesota, Wisconsin. I think, you know, after the Vietnam War, a first generation of Hmong were located to Minnesota and Wisconsin, and they're mountain people. They grow produce, they grow vegetables, they're farmers, and they do that a lot there. In Minnesota, they work at the farmer's market, they grow, they bought property, they grow corn, they grow tomatoes, and they sell them at the farmer's market, and they're really good at it. And we now have a second and third generation of Laotian Vietnamese. A lot of them are from Fresno. The youngest, the third generation youngest, they're pretty rowdy. They're pretty brazen about what they're doing. And they,
you inject the criminal element and, that changes everything. Just to let people know, housing units as of July 2019 in your entire county, there were 24,000 housing units. So when you talk about bringing in, 4,000 plus people, that's a lot of people. We're going to come right back. Sorry, this is going to go fast, very fast. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Please join us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along. Come inside, the show's about to start. Guaranteed to blow your head apart.
Going to go really fast today. Okay, so just to remind people, it's February 21st, 2021. You can find the page for this program at wethepeopleradio.us. I really do hope you go look at the pictures. And it's kind of funny, we just got started and I feel like we're already running out of time. So we're going to move next. We're going to move on to water use and the water abuse, which is it. This will blow your mind. So we got Mrs. A going to give us the lowdown on the water. Go right ahead.
Hey, how's it going, Erin? Thanks for having us.
Sure.
So I'll just start off saying that I've lived here for almost 20 years. I've raised my husband and I have raised two kids out here. We have always considered it heaven on earth. We just absolutely love it. And then about 5 years ago, we start seeing an influx of people in our local area, which is like, okay, that's fine. People are moving in. And then we find out that it's illegal marijuana growers, which still, to, we didn't think it was that big of a deal. And then all of a sudden, last summer, my neighbor comes to me and says that his well went dry. And three of our other neighbors' wells went dry within a week of each other. So we start investigating, like, what the heck's going on? And then a few miles away from us, we find two massive ranchers out here selling thousands. And then we find out later, 9 million gallons of water a day to all of these marijuana growers. So what happens is they bought all this land really, really cheap in a certain area that has no wells. And that's why the land is so cheap. So they have to bring in water from another area. So these ranchers are selling their water for cash to these subdivisions so these people can grow their weed. So the problem is they're dropping our water table at a massive rate. I think I have 1,620 million gallons of water a season. So if we do 9 million gallons a day, and each one of these water trucks is maybe 3,500 gallons, that's 2,571 water trucks a day.
So go back to that. We don't want to gloss that over, because go back and tell people again the amount of water per day. And this is not the only place that's growing illegal marijuana in Siskiyou County. This is one place.
No, it's not. This is just our community.
Right.
We're not talking about other areas in this area. This is just our local community. Our local community was about 1,000 people over 5 years ago. Now, with the influx of what I've been told is up to 7,000 at peak season. So imagine your community quadrupling seven times the amount of people within 5 years. Can you imagine that? How big is your city? Let's say, what is Reading?
90,000 people here. But can you imagine? Yeah.
No, I can't. And our roads are exactly the same. And so that's where I have a problem with, is these water trucks are on the roads day in, day out. And you need a specific license to drive these water trucks. Some of these water trucks are very much illegal, and they know it. So our county has put ordinances in place to no avail. So here we are, just trying to fight for our water rights. Fortunately, a lot of our neighbors' wells recharged after the season ended because the water pumping stopped tremendously because people can't grow as much in the wintertime. But here we are, we're going to go into another growing season, and I'm absolutely terrified that more of my neighbors' wells are going dry. These are residential wells. These are residential people, and the water is not being protected for our residential use. So that's where I'm at with it.
Because you're not on municipal water. So for people who live in a city...
No, we're not. Our water is free out here. Our water is free. All we pay for is the electricity to pump it out of our well. And so when you have your well going dry, you have to drop your well to get water. And a lot of these people are having to drop 30, 40 feet. We're talking in one season. Our well, our groundwater has dropped at least 30 feet. I mean, that's a massive amount of water. Our water tables can't recharge fast enough. And if something isn't done, then we're going to have to move because we won't have water in our wells. I mean, the ranchers that are selling water, I've been told their water goes down about 200 to 300 feet. My residential well is at about 70 feet. I can't compete with that. I can't drop my well down 300 feet.
No.
That's huge money. So you have these three agricultural producers who are selling, pushing 8 to 9 million gallons of water on a daily basis. That I don't know. You know, I need somebody. Bill, go over. You're the only one not doing anything here.
Holy cow! What was
Bill's
that?
Bill's just messing around in the chat room. Wait, get on there, find out how much water a regular house uses. I was like, I should look that up. I thought, wait, I can't do that. I've already got two computers going.
So a residence, as far as I've looked up, a residential house usually is about 100. I don't even know. I don't have any.
I don't know. That's what we need Bill for. Bill's going to look it up for us. He's going to be Wikipedia man. Please, Wikipedia man, save us. But so for people who don't speak water, you know, we have a lot of people in this country and out of the country who go to the faucet, turn the faucet, and the water comes out. Well, that's great, but that is not what happens where you are. You don't have a municipal water system. You guys each have to have a well, and that water table is shared really by everyone, I guess, for us lay people. It's kind of a shared water source. And when you start pulling out, oh, here we go, somebody.
About 108 gallons a day for an average household. If you've got, that's if you live like in a residential neighborhood.
Yeah.
But if you're rural, I'm sure you're going to use more than that because
depends on how much property you have.
Yeah, exactly.
But you roll in with all these illegal grows
people,
and they haul it all.
Well, that's the thing, is a lot of people say that alfalfa takes more water per marijuana, and it may or may not. The problem I have is that if you're going to grow agriculturally, you need to do it on agricultural land. This is residential land that they're growing on. you shouldn't be able to grow agriculture in a place that doesn't legally allow it. Everything that's going on here is very much illegal, and our county can't keep up with it and it can't handle it.
Yeah, so with 1 foot of
water... So here we are just fighting for our water rights. We just want our water rights.
Well, it would be nice to know that you were living in a house that you didn't have to camp out in. Because you had 30...
Yeah.
I don't remember, 36 or so people... 36 or so households, I'm sorry, last year that had no water through the bulk of the summer.
Exactly. And then we have to pay for our well to get dropped, and that's $2,000 or $3,000 that we don't have.
To drill it deeper.
Nobody's...
Yeah.
Yes, we have to drill, we have to drop it deeper. And then sometimes you can't even do that. Sometimes people are having to go 100 feet. It depends on where you are because the caverns here, the groundwater is very tricky in Siskiyou County. It's not like you expect like a giant lake is underneath us. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, right.
So it gets very complicated that way. But the fact still remains is 9 million gallons a day are being used for illegal marijuana cultivation in our county, and it's ruining my neighborhood. And if something doesn't change, we're either going to be stuck with it or we're going to move. And I don't want to move. I put too much time and energy invested into this place, and I just feel like we're drowning and nobody cares.
Well, and that's
I feel like we're all alone.
See, back in the day when it wasn't legal at the state level, I mean, this would have been easy. You know,
right.
could go in and do
and
this.
So what
now
they do
it's
is
all
they go
managed
up to 99
by
99 plants.
Right. So,
because if they go over 99 plants, then it's federally illegal, and then they actually get federally charged. So if they stay 99 and under, then all they get is a fine, and then they either pay that off or don't, and then just keep going and replant.
Well, and some of these pictures I'm looking at, there's a heck of a lot more than 99 plants on
right,
a parcel.
Right, that's the minimal.
Yeah, they subdivide to each other. It's very tricky. Okay, so I got clarification.
And if you look at it, each plant is like, I'm sorry.
Oh, 31 people, their wells went dry, in addition to the fire station. I forgot about that. That's right, the fire station had no water.
Yes.
What could go wrong?
And that fire station is actually closed down because there's no volunteers, even though we have more than 4,000 people living up in that area. None of them volunteer. Like, it would be different if they really cared about the area, if they built houses, took their kids to school here, volunteered at the local fire department. They do none of that. They come here, take the resources, rape the land, and then leave.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound very neighborly to me.
No, it isn't. And when you click, for people that might be looking at the website, if you click on the grid of pictures, it'll roll it through as a slideshow, and they'll get much larger. When you zoom in on those and you look, there's no houses there. This isn't a...
They don't even have toilets. There's no sewage. They drop tanks in the ground, and they burn their trash. They don't take their trash. I mean, I know I'm just supposed to talk about water, but...
No, that's okay, because it's really all connected. It is all connected.
It is.
And so we are going to talk about the chemicals and the garbage and what's left behind. But when we say subdivision, I'm always mindful that people will say, well, how could you have all this in a subdivision? Well, these subdivision metrics are like 5-acre parcels for the most part. Are they all 5 acres or is that just kind of the...
I've heard 1 acre, 5 acres, and that now they're buying up old ranches where these ranches get encroached on and they don't want to be surrounded because what they do is they run generators 24/7. So you're listening what used to be this beautiful rural area in the mountains, and now we're listening to generators all day and all night. So a lot of ranchers are selling and they're buying up these ranches. So it's starting to encroach in the ranch area now, and if something doesn't happen, our entire neighborhood is going to be all but nothing but crowds.
Yeah,
no,
they've got these 10-acre parcels, and I know they're leasing to a bunch of people. It is a disaster, which is why we're talking about it. Thank you so much. All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll come right back, and you are listening to We the People. If you want to share this with a friend and you've missed part of the audio, we post a commercial-free audio later this afternoon that you can forward to anybody. It's a MP3 file that you can listen to on your phone or wherever. So you'll be able to forward this along with the photos to folks. You can find that at wethepeopleradio.us.
Smoke on the water, fire in the sky. Smoke on the water. Mississippi, she's calling my name. Catfish are jumping, that paddle wheel bumping. Black water keep rolling on fast, just the same.
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on shining on me?
Oh, black water, keep on rolling.
Mississippi moon, won't you keep on
shining. Okay, so another thing that people like to forget about, but the environmental consequences of this are massive. I think if people looked at what's left behind on these grows, they would never smoke pot again. I mean, for the people who think that this is just, a natural product. So Mr. G is going to give us the lowdown on the environmental stuff, I think, at this point.
Hi, everybody, and thanks for the opportunity to talk. I'm not going to address the consequences that are internally within that particular area in which they're growing. I'm going to the consequences that are all the way down the drainage. And I'll start with water quality. You think about you don't have water, but we have a naturally occurring arsenic in the water in this area and in the ground. And it deposits itself in certain areas, and it's diluted by the quantity of water that goes through the system. Unfortunately, when you decrease the water, the concentration of the arsenic goes up. And there's a few wells that have been monitored, and where the water has been depositing the most is at our local elementary school, which has an adjacent daycare center right next door. And these children that are down there, our kids, our grandkids, and in respect, my great-grandkids, because I've been here 51 years. And they're drinking water with arsenic concentration over 6. And this is only going to increase because the water that's being extracted increases this arsenic density. And the WHO has defined that if you have a threshold of 10, then, you're beyond where you should be. You're at a place, such as, what was the one, up in the northern state, Michigan? You're there. But that's an arbitrary number. It's a provisional value that they set as a density. But what it does to our kids is that it has the effect of the cognitive development and the intelligence and the memory. So not only are we affecting them, that we're affecting them with the concentration of the arsenic at the place in which they are learning. They're learning. They're at their developmental stage.
Are we testing mm-hmm. that water that the on a regular
that water
basis?
That water is tested every year. It's currently at 6, but there's people that live everywhere around that school. So all those people aren't tested, and they're getting the concentration and more. But it's also, it affects the pregnant women. It's spontaneous abortion, stillbirth, premature birth, disease, cardiac disease, diabetes. It affects all that. But the value that they're using as a threshold of as damaging is an arbitrary value. So we don't, and the WHO doesn't know what it's going to do to the kids that we are infecting down here. And, oh, by the way, all these 7,000 people that have moved here, there's only 10 children that is enrolled in that school from all of these newcomers. And I got it. You know, you're here. You're retired. I got it. But this whole extraction hasn't looked at what the effects of the consequences all the way down the drainage. Now, that's just halfway down the drainage. If you continue all the way down the drainage, you're going to hit a nice little place called Salt Lake. And that's a traditionally migratory location, bird location, in which there's endangered species that land there. In particular, there's pelicans, sandhill crane, trumpeter swans, Canadian grebe, geese, and a variety of other endangered species that land there on their journey, you know, north and south, east and west. And now they have no water pooled in that area. And the little bit of pooled area water that is available is standing algae. And remember this, you know, anytime you have water, you also have the food source you know, that's being depleted because there's no water to grow that food source, the larvae, the insects, the native plants, and it goes on. But what we have is that the water that's being taken is being taken from those that are also very silent. These wildlife can't tell us, but we need to let their signs tell us that we're harming them, because everybody's harming them. And yeah, that's being monitored too, but you know, it's after the fact, not before the fact.
What's the EPA have to say about this?
They're hearing us, but they're doing nothing. They're hearing us, but they're doing nothing. It's all dependent upon the water. Well, yeah, well, that dries up. Well, it didn't dry up for 51 years. I've been here 51 years.
Yeah, it's funny. Just when all the big dope growing started, magically, this all began.
This all began. Now, let's just kind of travel down further down the drainage. With all of this water is, it percolates out of the ground further down the drainage. It's underneath the surface, but the lava tube then has its springs that pop up further down. And it all goes down to the Shasta River. The Shasta River and any of the species that, which by the way are endangered too, but the Chinook salmon, the steelhead, and others threatened and endangered species live there, but they also need oxygenated cold water as habitat. These species, these fish, all of them are silent. They can't talk for themselves. We have to talk for them. And they're not getting what they need. And it's questionable whether the environmental effects that you're not seeing until it's too late, whether it's irreversible. And that's what we feel and fear as a community, is that not only are we going, but everything that's dependent upon the water.
What,
and it's all by breaking the law to get there.
As far, you know, we talk about the water consequences. What about when we talk about the environmental impact? What else is going on up there as far as chemicals and that sort of thing? That we know about.
They use chemicals in their process, and I think there's some others that I think Miss Kay could probably talk of that. She has seen the chemicals that's been going by, and she probably has some insight. Miss Kay, would you like to unmute and speak on that aspect? I have not visited inside the area. Miss Kay?
Sure. I'd like to let everyone know that is not organically grown products. They use rodenticides and pesticides, banned chemicals that are illegal to purchase. And they use this in volumes on their large grows. I'm worried that is leaching into our soil, leaching into the water system. We've seen a decrease in owls that eat the rodents. I just feel that it has a strong environmental impact as they use these products. To what extent, we don't know, but we do know it's extensive, and they have been found at these grow sites that they raid in volumes.
Now, I understand that in order for them to be able to market that product in some of these legalized co-ops, that product needs to be tested for those types of chemicals. Is that where this is going, or is this all being more of a black market product?
It is black market. If you ask me, that's just my opinion. They grow it here, and they ship it back to back east where it's not legal. There has been evidence that the sheriff has collected where they have followed it across state lines all the way back to the east.
Okay.
Yeah, that wouldn't be all that surprising, considering they load up a big, I've seen videos of big U-Haul trucks full of pot being hauled away. So this isn't like some local co-op, You know, people like to minimize this. You know, our information on marijuana is just so skewed and weird. For people who still think it's not bad for you and that it's a natural product and all that, I really hope you go listen to some of the shows we've done on the brain effects. We did some shows with, and I'm going to go blank on her name, but under the pot tab on the website, Dr. Libby Stout. She's from Colorado, and that is her expertise. She has done some really, really excellent work on the effects on the brain. So, you know, we're talking specifically how this is affecting people who live where it's grown, but there's not even benefit once it's grown. I mean, I guess I'm kind of a hater, and I'm good with it.
Wow.
It's crazy that we even have this, that we legalized it, and now we've, you know, messed up where these people live. It's just...
But they're not even growing it to sell here.
It's all going elsewhere.
Most of it is being shipped to Minnesota, Wisconsin, in volumes, and they have literally made arrests along the way so that it has been tracked to those states, and they're getting a really high dollar for it.
Hmm. So much for legalizing it, making it cheaper,
yes,
and getting rid of all the crime. We'll just stick a fork in that, too. We'll be right back. Got to take a really quick break. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. Okay, bring it up now.
Hey, I'm bringing this up.
Hey. I'm going to bring that up. You can go right ahead, Big
Well, Bill. I got a question. Everybody knows California has legalized marijuana, and you know, you can. Every county has different regulations on how and where and how much and when and all this, but federally, it's still illegal to grow marijuana, and I guess my question is, why doesn't the federal government step in, do a flyover, see all this illegal growing going on, federal illegal growing, whether it's on private property or not, and bring in federal agents to shut it all down? Has that been attempted?
May I say something? This is C.
Yeah, please.
Sure.
We have contacted every agency until we're blue in the face, and it is like nobody wants to touch this. We do have a new sheriff. Hopefully he will be able to get people to get off their cans and start moving.
Yeah.
But as citizens of Big Springs, we have gone through every possible agency that is supposed to help when this kind of crime is going on in our community, and they deflect us.
Right.
Well, I've heard from the FBI, actually, that the assistant U.S. attorney has had no interest in prosecuting. So that's part of the problem. I mean, if you're going to go after people on the crime front, got to be able to prosecute it. But your district attorney, actually, has a case currently pending, and I think it's money laundering and that kind of thing. It's kind of the Al Capone deal.
Yeah. It's the whole gamut. Illegal weapons, money laundering, the growing, the works.
Wow.
So he does. But it's just, they are you know, this is a small community and they only have so many resources.
Oh, sure.
Sure.
Oh, I can see where that's a huge factor. You've got a county budget up there that's minuscule, and they've got you totally outnumbered, and it'd break the bank if the county had to foot the bill for all of this. That's why I was kind of curious why our federal government isn't stepping in. I mean, gosh, if you're talking thousands of people, I would think you could call in the National Guard and clean that out. But if your U.S. attorneys don't want to touch it, then it never gets off the ground.
And you live in a state that's very marijuana friendly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they are for the wrong reasons. They need to drive up here, and I dare them to go into the grows, drive in with their cars, and go into the grows and see how many people follow them and how many people want to run into their vehicles. This is in the Shasta Vista. They will literally ram your vehicle, and they will follow you out, and they will go on A-12, and they will follow you to your home.
Oh.
That's how bad the gangs are. It's frightening.
Yeah, that would be. That definitely would
be. And these, if you go to the local, speaking of the gangs, if you go to the local store, which is here off of A-12, which is called May 10, you can no longer go in there to get gas and just do normal business. You will see people standing with their iPhones, and you do not know if they are taking pictures of you or what they are doing. They are the gangs of the Hmong community. They're called the Menace of Destruction, or MODE, and they have gangs throughout California, Wisconsin, Colorado, Minnesota, Oregon, you name it. There is a site on Wikipedia that will explain these people. And they intimidate you. They steal property. They've had armed robberies out here. We have taken photos, gone out and taken photos, and we've had people pull up to the side of our vehicle and start yelling at us, and we've had to take off. They've had murders, assaults, reprisals. There's prostitution out here. People have witnessed young Asian women dressed up very nice, driving Cadillac Escalades with lots of makeup on, and they're going back to these grows. There's sex trafficking, and there's also we've witnessed like a young Asian woman in a van with a child that is hauling marijuana. The list goes on. It's insanity.
Well, my understanding is people have been approached by some of the people being trafficked, looking for help.
Yes.
So it isn't just like somebody looked at them and said, oh, I think they're being trafficked. I mean, they've actually reached out to try to get help.
Yeah, they, you can tell. I mean, they kind of stick out like they don't have any Western-style clothing on. There was one that was noticed at the local restaurant that's off of that's near Grenada. It's an Asian restaurant that opened up, and they don't look you in the eye. They're scared to death. They're shaking. They don't have the proper clothing on for this area because it's very cold right now. I mean, you can tell they're being trafficked. It's awful.
Hmm. Well,
and that's just, you know, that's just some of it. The violations with the DMV, the water trucks, and the people that are driving them, most of them aren't licensed. None of the water trucks are, they say they're delivering potable water. There's no correct markings on these water trucks. There's no certification of bacterial analysis.
They say that all those water trucks are potable water? That's the storyline?
That's the story.
Gosh, they must be insanely thirsty.
Very thirsty.
Where are they storing it all?
There are tons and tons of water tank deliveries every day now on the highway. You'll see flatbeds full of these black water tanks that are going out to the grows. And so they're storing the water in that, but of course that is to rev up for this season so that they can water their plants. It's not for drinking.
No. That season is right around the corner, so I would imagine the wells are all pretty high right now, and the tanks are all going in and getting filled, and as soon as it starts warming up.
Actually, they've never stopped. They have been working nonstop through the season to get revved up for this year. And there's more greenhouses that are going up. Apparently, you don't need to get a permit to put a greenhouse up. They're blatantly putting them up right along the highway. I mean, you can see them from the highway. You know, so it's just like it's a free-for-all out here for the illegal black market growers. They don't pay attention to our laws. We had a serious accident the other day, three-vehicle accident. They go in packs. They'll go back and forth to the town in threes usually, and they drive really close together so there's no interference. If they get pulled over by law enforcement or something, they have ways of distracting the law enforcement. I mean, they're all on their cell phones, constantly on their cell phones when they're driving, which is very dangerous on this highway. Many of us out here that are seniors have had near misses of head-on collisions or been pushed off the highway from the Asian folks that are out here. It's awful.
Well, I know people have said that they block the roads off so that people can't get through the area, and even if it's just, you know, like a rope across it or whatever, the implication is go ahead and cross it. You'll mostly only do that once.
Yeah, we had this latest accident. One of the individuals that was involved fled the scene of the accident, and they're looking for him right now. We don't know what nationality they were. We're trying to find that out. But, it's just... You get out on the highway now, and you have to really, really pay attention because they are not paying attention when they drive. I'm telling you, it's somebody's going to have a head-on out here.
Well, we also know that,
or they're going to, excuse me.
No, well, I was going to say
the back of the water trucks.
Well, that too, and you have a lot of foreign nationals up there, and everyone knows that because they tried to vote some years back. They had about 1,000 people who tried to vote. And that turned into a whole big situation. But now you've got the Chinese cartel coming in on top of that, and they're serious and dangerous. It's not something to mess with. We've got to blow out of here for the news, but we'll come back. We'll come back and do more because there's always more. Please go to the website, take a look at the pictures. It's WeThePeopleRadio.us. Rocky Mountain High.